Take me where the promises are real.
Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the Max Club. We're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety.
Tell us or her story.
This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual and their personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. I met this lady at the tradition, and it was suggested that I choose her to tell her story, and her husband's been here before, and he told his story, and so I give you Anna B.
Right. Hey everyone, my name is Anna, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm going to not lean over the whole time, but if I'm not loud enough, let me know, and I can. So my sobriety date is January 28th of 2016, so I'm about 6.5 years sober. My home group, like she mentioned, is the Fifth Tradition group. I have a sponsor. I stay connected to my sponsor on a weekly basis, which is important, and I do sponsor other women. I think it's quite a miracle that I'm here. I mean, it's quite a miracle that any of us are here, because some of us never make it to these seats, you know. I was raised in South Georgia, Henry County, a little near Clayton County, which is where I hung out. My dad was an alcoholic. I know everyone says this. I'm going to say it. I don't know if that's the reason I'm alcoholic. I don't know. You know, obviously, my mom and my dad got divorced at a very young age. I think I was like 1 year old. And some of the first memories I have with drugs and alcohol was with my dad. And I'm going to be a little explicit in this story, not too much, but a little bit, just to kind of give you an idea of what my disease looked like at a very, very young age. What I do when I put anything in my body. So I was about 14. 12 to 14, I don't know. I was staying with my dad, and we had been drinking the night before, because when my dad picked me up, we would drink. I started drinking probably around that age. I can kind of talk about my first drink here in a minute. But I remember I was really hazy the next morning, and we went to a gas station, and someone asked for money, and my dad asked if we could get something in exchange. And so we went to a trap house, and I used crack with my dad, you know, for the first time when I was like 13 years old. And I remember walking out of that duplex, and I didn't know what I used. I don't remember how I felt. I don't remember feeling it particularly that great, honestly. But all I know is there was someone outside the door begging for it and asking if they could have what we bought. And I told her no. Like, that was my, you know, no compassion. You're dying. I just used something for the first time. I know nothing about it. Don't even remember it making me feel that good. And my instinct was, no, you can't have it. And my second instinct was, I'm going to steal it from my dad. And the third instinct was, I'm going to ration it every day after school, middle school, you know. And that was my thought. And that's how I react to drugs and alcohol when I put it in my body. You know, when I put anything in my body that changes the way I feel, I want more, even if I don't like it. And if you're in this room tonight, you probably relate to that. You know, because I've done a lot of things so many times that I hated. I hated the way they made me feel. Absolutely hated it. Did it anyways. Burned my life to the ground doing it too. You would think you would at least enjoy it a little bit, right? Towards the end, I didn't enjoy any of the things that I was doing anymore. You know, and honestly, I don't know what it was about me that sought out those types of things at a young age, but I did. You know, I don't know. The drug people and the people who drink a lot was like who ended up being my friend. I don't know why. But there was something about, I think, feeling different and not being here, ultimately, that I think was attractive. There was something about the adrenaline, the adventure I thought I saw through it all, that was attractive. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I felt different when I was younger. I don't remember if I felt different, but I know I was a brat, and I was manipulative. I remember one time I stole my best friend's Backstreet Boy. I believe it was Backstreet Boys. I don't know, but it was a CD like that. I stole it from her and mailed it to myself as a gift. You know, those are the kind of things I did. Stole cigarettes from my grandmother at a young age, right? What, you know, I was always kind of a temper tantrum type, just entitled brat, really. And that didn't change too much as I got older. Even when I did not deserve it at all. I felt that I did. And, you know, my drinking career really started in middle school, and it didn't just start with alcohol. It started with a lot of other things that you get. You can come to find it in middle school, which isn't much, but I was able to find it and the people who had it. And, you know, I remember one of the first times I got drunk, I was hanging out with high schoolers, which is really cool, right? So that was definitely, you know, alcohol and some of these, you know, drugs were as a rite of passage to hang out with these cooler, older people. And, of course, being like a young girl, I felt really insecure around these older people. And I remember we were driving to the Braves game for someone's birthday. And so what I thought was a good idea, which is very much how I drink, is to get a solo cup full of vodka. I never did that again because that's like insane. But I chugged most of it. And I remember I don't even think it was a full 5 minutes before I blacked out. But I remember feeling on top of the world those 5 minutes. And little did I know, I would spend the better half of my life, you know, well, probably another 15 years, chasing that 5 minutes. I mean, I would sell my soul and all my dignity for 5 minutes, you know, to kind of be asleep and awake a little bit, you know what I mean? Or to be almost at the point where I'm no longer here, just enough to, like, kind of feel alive. I know that sounds weird, but it's like I want to be in that space, you know? And I remember feeling that way. I remember feeling so, like, cute and fun, and we were listening to music. It was 5 minutes. It was all, you know, all a bunch of 5 minutes. But I ended up blacking out, getting alcohol poisoning, not being able to go to the Braves game. I can't tell you how many Braves games. If you're from Atlanta, the old stadium, so many memories, you know, of not making it into the game. And that was definitely me. I never made it into games. You know, I lived near Atlanta Motor Speedway, and, you know, I was the girl that would go and just hop RVs, you know, and funnel beers and drink the whole time. And, you know, at a certain age, when I would drink, I would seek out drugs. I don't know where that came from, you know. I don't know. There's some people who just drink, and that's all they do. And I will say, you know, my reaction to alcohol is 100% abnormal. The story with the solo cup is one of a thousand. I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm miserable, and I do not think I have alcoholism. I do not think I'm an alcoholic. Now, I have one of a thousand stories just like the you know, the foaming at the mouth before the Braves game. refuse to think that I'm alcoholic. I'm a drug addict, you know. And that really, thinking I could definitely control my drinking, obviously knowing I cannot control the drug use, really kept me from coming here sooner. You know, it really, really did. And some of the things that, the drug that I ended up finding myself most interested in, I didn't get physically dependent on for very long, you know. And so that was another thing, right? So I'm not physically dependent on anything. I'm not physically dependent on alcohol. I don't drink in the morning. I don't use every day. Surely I'm not alcoholic. I would have never in my life considered coming here. I mean, I got sober at 26, 32 now. And, you know, even seeing my dad suffer from alcoholism, he died of this disease, traumatic death, you know, and a lot of people come to me and say, oh, I have daddy issues, I have mom issues, don't we all, right? I mean, we're like the epitome of, like, whatever issue there is, right? Like, oh, I'm codependent, well, duh, you know what I mean, obviously. I have no self-esteem, join the club, you know. So, you know, room full of people who don't really have much going for them when they come in here. Yeah, we think we're unique, right? I have a traumatic past. Probably not unique in that, you know. I had traumatic stuff happen with my dad, you know. I don't think that really has much to do with why I behaved the way that I did. I had that reaction towards drugs and alcohol way before my dad died and I had to bury him, you know. I had that picture, and it didn't motivate me to not drink. It just showed me that I wasn't an alcoholic because he had pancreatic cancer and liver disease. I mean, obviously, I have a car, right? And I am this cute little teenager that gets away with whatever she wants. Obviously, I don't have a problem, you know, yet I'm a blackout drinker. You know, I'm a blackout drinker from the start. I really was. And I used to joke and say that I was allergic to alcohol. This was before I knew anything about an allergy, which I certainly did not buy into. But I thought that I was allergic to alcohol because I would black out very, very easily. So, of course, I do what any responsible alcoholic does, and I add Xanax, right? And then drive, you know. So that's kind of what I would do. And this is all after, like, seeing all this happen with my dad. And again, I mean, of course I was upset, you know, obviously. But it didn't once open my eyes. Not really. I was just like, well, I'm not alcoholic. Because he was under the bridge with a, you know, brown bag. And I never drink a brown bag. You know what I mean? And so when I was in high school, I ended up getting really addicted to this one drug. And I ended up getting arrested and getting a felony and, you know, right when I turned 18, right, just like perfect timing. And that really woke me up. And this was, you know, but again, it was the drug. It was the drug. And I tell you, I've been addicted to so many different drugs, you know. And so it always was that one substance. But I could drink. It was fine. But the drink, I noticed more and more that the drink, the older I got too, the drink would lead me to back to the drug. All the time. I would swear off forever. And I would go quite a bit. Now, I was the type of person that I would normalize and rationalize alcohol. Even though I was a blackout drinker, I'd hit you in the face. I'd take Xanax too and drive. That, you know, what I don't remember doesn't count, right? I was like a really scary person when I drank. I would just beat the shit out of you. Like, really, I mean, I was a fighter. And I know that may seem surprising. I don't know. I would be terrified if I drank because it's been so long. I mean, I'm scared who I would kill. You know what I mean? Like, I was a violent, violent drinker. And I just ruined every single relationship because I was a cheater, you know. Regardless, I always would find a reason to rationalize and think, well, I'm not an alcoholic, you know, really. But when I would start to drink, I would go eventually and start going to the dope man's house almost every time, you know. And, you know, I'm the type of person that ends up in cul-de-sacs often, abandoned cul-de-sacs, usually where I hang out, usually by myself, usually staring at the steering wheel, you know, just there. That's hanging out, you know. Thinking I'm living life, right? I'm the type of person that, like, gets so low, I write really sad, like, poems to myself about how I'm going to die. And then, you know, the next day I'm living the high life thinking, you know, and making sure I'm getting the Lil Wayne CD as soon as it comes out. You know, I'm that girl. As soon as it comes out, I'm going. I'm going and getting it, and I'm going to sit in my room by myself until I do enough of whatever I'm doing to feel happy enough to invite you over. And then you ask me for something, and I'm done with you. You know, and I thought that that was, you know, honestly, and I'm sure you guys relate to this, you know, as my disease progressed and I found myself very miserable, with or without drugs and alcohol, very, very miserable. I don't know about you guys, but I started struggling with anxiety and depression. I don't know, I'd say, you know, probably about halfway through my drinking and using. I didn't when I was really young. You know, I didn't. I don't remember. If I did, I don't remember. I mean, I certainly felt, like, different, you know, at times. But you know, as my disease progressed, I remember the times where I would go and I wouldn't drink or use, and I remember feeling just, like, miserable. You know, I went to college. I didn't graduate. I did graduate in sobriety, but I went to college. I was there for 4 years, actually. Ended up failing out the last semester because I went to a rave, and I never came back, you know. Just never went back. I had two classes. Never went back. Because my drug dealer boyfriend, who I didn't know his name, had us a hotel, and he stole my car and stole my keys, and he stole my phone, and my laptop was locked in the room, which I don't know even why I brought my laptop, thinking I'm going to finish this, like, last course I have. I did not finish the last course, because Crow, my boyfriend at the time, you know, whom I couldn't identify with, you know, I couldn't get in the room, and I was like, I don't know the guy's name, but that, my stuff's in the room, and the guy was like, no, you're not going to the room. So, you know, I sat out there for 2 days with nothing, but, you know, he had what I wanted, so I moved to Oklahoma with him, you know what I mean? That's the kind of how reckless my life looked, and really, like, the any length I would go for drugs and alcohol. You know, when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and they say, well, you've got to get sponsored, you've got to make a couple phone calls, you got to go to the meeting, I'm like, what? But at any length that I would go to, I mean, chasing this boy out to Oklahoma, I've only lived out of state one time, it's Oklahoma. Terrible experience. Overall, terrible experience. You know, but that's where my alcoholism took me. I'd go to any length, right? I'd drop out of school. I would stay in an abandoned house for days with people I don't know. That's what I do. You know, I go to a Mexican restaurant, haven't had a drink in 30 days, kind of show you a picture of alcoholism, and it talks about this in the big book where, you know, like, you, like, sober up a little bit, and you get your life together, and then you pull it all down, you know, and I was good at that. I was good. You know, I put my little glasses on, you know, and look all smart and talk all smart, get me a little job, and I would do good for like 30, 60 days. I wouldn't drink either, but, you know, I'm doing pretty good. You know, manipulate the boy, get back with me, you know, because that's important. He was a good guy, so that was good. And then, you know, I would think someone would invite me out to go to Mexican. So that's where it started. Mexican restaurants. For me, I still love Mexican so much, Mexican food. But I would go, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to have one margarita. It's been a couple months since I've had a margarita, and I would have just one margarita, and then I would go on Facebook. What's your boy doing from middle school? You know what I mean? I haven't talked to him in 15 years. I wonder what he's doing, you know? So I hit him up, and then we speak the language not of the heart, but we speak some language where you don't say anything, but you know. And I don't know how I know that he has what I want, but he does. And so I leave my date, and I leave the, you know, sweet couple at the Mexican restaurant, you know, because they're just normal people. They go out, they go for a drink. They have a kid right now. I'm kind of like on the, you know, I'm like the one that, like, I'm pregnant, and, you know, so I'm kind of like the late bloomer of my, you know, high school and whatever. But, you know, they just wanted a margarita and maybe smoke hookah. I don't know. I don't even think they do that. But I, you know, I went to my boy that I haven't talked to in 15 years, right? Let's meet up. And so I go home, and I'm living with my mom, because that's where I always go back to, my mom. Go home, and my mom, she can tell I'm drinking. Mom, I'm fine. I'm fine. Now, mind you, I haven't used this drug in a year because I hate it. I hate it. These other things doesn't get me the same. I hate this drug. I'm not going to use this drug again, but I have one margarita. It's a good idea. And this is after moving back to Georgia from living with the Crow. And I was going to get my life back together. This was my chance. I was going to move back to Atlanta. Well, to Georgia. And I was going to move to Atlanta. And I was going to get into real estate. And I was going to be very successful. And I'm doing great because I haven't drank in a while. And look, that's all it took. One margarita. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal, honestly. I went 45 days without drinking. I haven't used this one drug in forever. Surely I wouldn't come back to Atlanta to do this. I came back here to get into real estate. And then before I know it, you know, 4 days later, me and homeboy, you know, haven't seen him in 15 years. We're best friends now, you know. And I'm with people I do not know in an abandoned house. Nowhere to go. Nowhere to go. I feel miserable. I feel terrible. But I can't stop. Can't go to sleep. Never. Can't ever go to sleep. You know, because I can't ever wake up. Because what's going to happen when I wake up? I'm going to be back here, miserable, at Mama's house, square one, with nothing. And I don't know if you guys remember when you know you're gonna have to stop, right? You're going to have to stop drinking and whatever you're doing. You're going to have to stop. But you're terrified. And it's and I remember that feeling. And it wasn't so much because I liked the way I felt at the time, because oftentimes I needed to stop because I didn't feel good, right? I've been forced to stop many times because my body just said, you're done, you know? But I remember just always being terrified, you know? And I think the truth is you know, the drugs and alcohol, and you hear this a lot, drugs and alcohol was the solution to whatever I had going on with me, a lot of stuff, right? All the things we talk about, the isms, the daddy issues, the low self-esteem, you know, the things that don't make me unique from you. My solution was drugs and alcohol until it wasn't. Until even when I was doing those things that I thought would make me feel better, I did not feel better. I did not feel better. And I was just terrified. Really, you know, I have a living sober problem. I'm sure some of you have been around, you've heard that. But for some reason, someone like me, with any length of time sober or not drinking or using, I find myself just not okay. And it's the little trivial things that get me, like the traffic. You know, and it's interesting because I don't know about you guys, but I would find that the littlest stuff, like something that happened at work, or traffic, or like my boyfriend, or, you know, whoever at the time is getting on my nerves. It's the little stuff that would like pile up, right? And then I would say, you know what, F it. It's Thursday night, just beer. I'm just drinking beer. And then I'll drink beer that night, and the next night I'll drink liquor, and the next night I'm at the dope man's house. But it's funny because we come in here and we get sober and we don't feel like we need to talk to our sponsors about those little things. Like, oh, well, it's not a big deal. I'm fine, you know, fine, fine, you know. And, but, I mean, obviously, like, I don't do well living sober. And I don't do well living sober for a couple years in sobriety. You know, I remember, I need to see, so it's 30, so I got 20 minutes. So I'm going to going to get, kind of tell you what it looked like when I got sober. But, you know, I towards the end, I would say like the last couple of years, I kind of knew that there was like something going on, you know, because why would I keep ending up at the abandoned houses? Why did I end up doing those things I swore I would never do? I saw it with drugs very clearly. But with alcohol, though, you know, I was starting to notice that, like, dude, I drink like crazy. You know, I get blackout drunk. I do terrible things. And I end up doing drugs. And like, honestly, that wasn't who I wanted to be. It truly wasn't. I mean, there was a time when I thought it was cool. But when you get older and everyone else is settling down and, like, getting into, like, a career and, like, graduating, and it wasn't really that cool anymore. You know, I didn't really want to do that anymore. And there was a time where I thought that I was just going to die that way. I really did. Like, I just was like, this is who I am. I'm a drug addict. This is what I want. It's not what I wanted. I just didn't think there was any other way. Honestly, I was not exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous before I came here. I knew nothing of the 12 steps. My dad died of this disease. I put him in hospice. I did not know. I genuinely did not know. I was not educated on treatment centers. I didn't know about halfway houses, nothing. But I knew that I had become increasingly miserable. I knew that my sprees, my binges, were demoralizing, to say the least. Coming into the office, I don't know about you guys, but if you go into the office after some of the things that, like, I would do. Now, I did end up becoming a real estate agent. I'm not one anymore, but, you know, you work for yourself as a real estate agent, okay? So you don't really have a lot of accountability. But you know, I worked with all these people who were, like, you know, they were in Buckhead, right? So this is, like, my dream. And they were like, oh, wow, they're so successful. And then I would, you know, I would end up in an abandoned house for 4 days. You know, and you're talking about double life. I mean, it's no joke. I mean, I felt terrible. You know, I felt humiliated. I absolutely hated who I was, but I could not think about what I did. I could not do it. If I wanted to keep moving forward in my life, like, I had to shove that stuff down. You know, it was not an option for me. You know, and so I got really good at that, but I was increasingly miserable. And I reached out for help, but I didn't end up taking the help. They suggested I go to a meeting. I didn't end up doing it because I thought to myself, what am I going to do if I don't drink? That was my main concern. That was my first concern. What am I going to do if I can't drink? I could get down with not doing drugs, you know, because drugs are bad, right? You're taught that. Drugs are bad. And they're not as normalized, you know, and as much, but like, not drinking either, like, I just could not imagine. So I didn't get the help that I needed, and I ended up, you know, drinking again, as I always do, for whatever reason, usually nothing major, something very minor, and I end up at the dope man's house again with someone I don't know playing slots. You know, I mean, it's just like, here I am, you know, again, and disappear for days on end. No one knows where I'm at. And I convinced myself it's what I wanted to do when really I didn't have any choice. And I had no excuse, you know, I really didn't. And they talked about that in the video. It's like deep inside, we really don't know why we do it. And I mean, I got like, I that's definitely was me. Like, I did not know. So that happened, and, you know, I'm grateful for the hard stuff because it got me here way quicker than I would have gotten here myself, you know, probably. And someone recommended a meeting, so I went to Triangle, and I wore a business suit, you know, because I was not one of you, and I just wanted to be separate, you know. I wanted to play the part I wanted the world to see, including you, you know. And I went there, and people, you know, said they'd give me their number, and I was very excited about that because I love, like, talking about myself and what's going on with the boys and, like, all the things. And so I did that, and I talked to a couple girls, you know, and they mentioned the 90 meetings in 90 days, which I thought was crazy. I was like, well, I didn't know you went like that often, you know. And I don't even know if I did 90 or 90, I'm not sure. But That didn't end up working, you know, because I went out with this boy on Tinder. You know, being kind of single, I got to be dating somebody, and then you go out and they drink, and then you drink, and you're just like, oh, here we go again, you know, same thing, margarita, La Priya. And then I ended up, one of my first home groups was, well, my first home group was NABA, actually. It was a 9:30 a.m. meeting. Had a sponsor here for a short period of time. You know, she was really sweet, really sweet. I'm not sure. You know, I wanted to kill myself. Like, I wanted to die, you know. And I was taking Xanax because you guys said that you have no opinion on outside issues. So that's what I took from it. And so I wasn't really sober, and my 90 days was easy. Because I was so Xanax. I mean, I had a picture of my first 90 days. I mean, I was just like, you know, just doing fine. But I would take a little Xanax before I came in here. And, you know, when I was getting anxious, right? Like, getting anxious, you're going to take a little, you know, so. And I did that. But I was really, really miserable, guys. Like, I'm the type of person, when I got sober, I was not, like, digging this thing at all. I hated coming to meetings. Still not a meeting fan. Still not. It's hard when someone's like, hey girl, you want to go to a meeting? I'm like, okay, sure, I guess. I don't know. Like, I'm just not, you know, it's still like I have to push me to do some of this stuff, you know, but you know, I knew I was desperate and I was dying. I really wanted to kill myself. I really wanted to. I wanted to drink a lot. I did not want to be here at all. But there was something, you know, I don't know what it was, guys, but there was something, I suppose, in you. I don't know. I didn't really like you all that much. I think I was just really miserable, and I didn't know what else to do. Because I had been on the health meds before. That didn't do it. I'd done the drug, all the things. That didn't do it. Really nowhere else to go, honestly. You know, really, I think is what it boils down to. And so I ended up getting another sponsor. She's still my sponsor today. And we started going through the 12 steps. And, you know, it took me probably a good year to fully concede about number, like, step one. I mean, and I think a lot of people come in here and they're convinced they just are a drug addict. And but maybe they have some experience with alcohol. But, you know, for me, like, it took me a really long time to like even look at my drinking, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, going through the steps. And I think that's completely fine. And she was talking about before the meeting, you know, how we built our relationship with God. God, that took a long time. It took a long time for me to actually surrender and like bring this higher power into my life on a daily basis and actually believe it would keep me sober. It took me years, you know. But I will tell you one thing that I believe has kept me here is I kept doing the things my sponsor told me to do. So when I got my sponsor, she was pretty straightforward. She was pretty hard on me. Very hard on me. And she said, you know, this is what you're going to do. You're going to call me every day. You're going to call two other women in recovery every day. You're going to come and you're going to make this your home group. She didn't give me an option. She's going to make this your home group, and you're going to do service in the home group. Just get a service commitment. And then she would be like, too, she would text me and be like, oh, we're having a fellowship event. You got to come to that, too. And I'm like, wait, you just said I got to go to the meetings. Now, she wanted me to do all the things. So we're going rafting, I'm going rafting, right? We're going to eat, I'm supposed to be going to eat. And then obviously meeting her and then praying. And, you know, I was raised in a Christian home, and so I didn't have this big prejudice towards God. So I thought that religion was what was going to help me, you know, for many, many years. And I had tried that. I have. And it, you know, some people sober and it keeps them sober, you know, and that's fine. That's great. Didn't work for me. So, but I had this conception that it was me and God skipping off in the sunset, you know, because when my sponsor and I went through step one in the big book, line by line, we got to step two, and I said, I don't need this step. I'm good. You know, but all the while, relying on God, what is that? what is that? I come in here and I think I have an opinion and I know what that looks like. But my life has been nothing but self-will run riot. I have not given a shit about anybody or anything but myself. And I want to pretend like I know what it looks like to rely on God. I don't know what it looks like to rely on anyone but me. Period. And that was a hard thing to let go of. You know, because I am someone who, if it's going to be, it's up to me. You know, and I mean, I think a lot of us are kind of ingrained with that. Just being, you know, living here in the U.S. But, you know, that's really, and so I think step two, coming to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, not so much, man, not so much. But you just have to be willing to see that. Thought I knew. Man, I came in here, I was 90 days sober, and I was like a preacher, like a little big book. You know, going around quoting the big book. You know, I'm so excited about getting all my sponsees. And I mean, I just was like Queen AA, right? And gosh, I mean, so little that I knew and so little that I still know, you know. And I was driving here tonight thinking, I don't know. God, I will tell you, you know, the first year of recovery is still so stinking long. I don't know how many of you in your first year, Raise your hand. Okay, so pretty good, but still so stinking long. God, the years after that fly. Because life gets good, you know, and I think the difference between someone like myself, who's not special, and someone like myself who stays, and all the others who don't. There's a lot of people who don't. Even with some time, they leave, you know. And I think the difference is, it's not because I really got step two, or like I live in step three all the time, like surrender. No, I don't. You know, I try. I think the difference is I keep doing the things my sponsor told me to do in the beginning. I really, really do. Honest to God, I can stand up here and say, I call my sponsor every single week and I don't miss a week. I maybe go 10 days, you know, and I tell her what I'm going to do before I do it. If I want to move, I talk to her about it first. If I want to have a baby, I talk to her about it first. If I want to get a new car, I talk to her about it first. It's not because she's going to tell me what to do. It's because I need to be convinced that I can't run my life myself and I can't hear God direct. I just cannot. I cannot, you know. I go to my home group meetings, even though I don't want to. I'm pregnant. Me and my husband have fertility issues. And I was chairing the meeting, annual chair, when I was pregnant. I was so sick, y'all. So sick. The last thing I wanted to do was talk about alcoholism. You know what I'm saying? Like, look, I am not talking about alcoholism tonight. You know, I did not feel good. But guess what? My butt was at that meeting. And you know, I'm showing up and I'm doing all the things, and I think that's what's kept me here, is I have been as honest as I'm able to be at any given time, and I've kept showing up. And a lot of things have ebbed and flowed. I've had resentments that I've hung on to. I've done many fifth steps, you know. I've made a lot of amends. I've done a lot of things wrong. Done a lot of things right, you know. And it's so crazy because I'm the girl that every person I was ever with I cheated on, okay, never was in a consistent relationship longer than 4 months, period. No one ever wanted to marry me. I never in a million years thought I was going to get married. I did not even think I wanted children. And it's like, wow, like, I come in here and I humble myself just a little bit. I still will let you go just a little bit. Sit down, met with my sponsor every week. Did the things she told me to do, you know, prayed, trusted God as much as I could, day in and day out, week in and week out. And gosh, I've been blessed with like a family and a marriage, you know, the faithful marriage. I have 100% clear conscience. Wow, never had that before. You know, I mean, Alcoholics Anonymous has given me sobriety, but it's given me life. It's given me relationships. I didn't have relationships when I came in here. I didn't have friends. I didn't think I needed friends. You know, I didn't need you guys. I'm independent, right? I don't like to do anything, you know, with anybody. And I don't like people. And I'm an introvert. Man, I would have sold myself short. I would have. I have friends today. And we do things. And I travel. travel a lot. And I mean, guys, my dad died, and, you know, obviously I shared that. And I get it. I get it. So he died of a heart attack in the woods, you know, alcohol-induced heart attack. And I get it. He was tired. I get it. And a lot of times people don't see there being any other way. And I get it because I've been in that place. Like, when I'm in the cul-de-sac, right, knowing I got just a little bit left, and I can't imagine the next day. I can't picture being sober and happy. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? And then I get here and I'm 90 days sober and I'm like, man, this, I gotta go. You know what I mean? Like, this is not what I thought. You know, I'm miserable and I'm not happy and I don't have what, you know, what I want yet. And I'm so glad that I stayed. You know, whatever your sponsor has you doing, do it. If you work the steps, keep working them, you know, help other people. Talks about enlarging our spiritual life through not prayer and meditation, you know, off in the sunset, through self-sacrifice and work with others. I helped a sponsee today. I'm not saying that because I wanted to. I did not want to. I was tired, but I did, and I'm here. And, you know, it gets to a point where there's times where I don't want to do this stuff anymore. You know what I mean? I mean, who wants to do this all the time? Like, every, you know, go to a meeting, you know, every week and, right? But I don't make decisions based on how I feel anymore, you know? And I don't make decisions based on what I want in the moment. Look at some of the decisions we've made based on what we wanted in the moment, you know? I make the decision to show up, not because I always want to, not because I always feel like it, because my life depends on it, you know? Because I've grown convinced of step one, and not in my first year. Probably took me 2 or 3 years to really be convinced of that. And, you know, I tell you, since, you know, planning to have a baby, I've thought of all the ways that maybe I should scale back, you know, on AA, right? Like, I owe it now. You know, I owe it to my family. I owe it to my dad, who never got to experience it. And, you know, it's just given me my life. It's given me my life. So if you thought you lived before, but you've not been sober all that long, wait. Wait for it. You know, wait for it. I think the biggest thing that I have today that makes all the things that I do, you know, worth it is I have peace of mind. I'm going to go home tonight. I'm going to finish this up. But this is a life that I never thought I would have. I'm going to go home tonight, and my dog's going to be there. I'm going to give her a bunch of kisses. And it's, and I'm going to lay down and I'm going to read. I'm going to go to sleep. And I'm going to wake up. And I'm going to drink my coffee and I'm going to pray and I'm going to be okay. And that's every day. I would do anything for that before. Anything for that. I would have sold my soul. And I did. You know, for a second of relief to feel okay for a minute. But I'm so grateful that I've been given another chance at life. And if you're new, I hope you stay. And if you don't feel the blessings of the program yet, that's okay. It's not about your feelings anyways. Stay. I promise it works. And thanks for having me.
First I slept, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window, for a heart it beats for me. Takes me where the promises are real. For something that set me free, and I'd arrive to a world in harmony. See love as a vision that one day. Take me where the promises are.